You're listening to the Patriots All 22 podcast with Evan Lazar and Adam Kirkjian.
This is unequivocally the sweetest.
Welcome into another edition of the Patriots All 22 podcast brought to you by CLNS Media and the CLNS Media Podcast Network. I'm Evan Lazar. With me, as always, Adam Kirkjian, and we're going to get right into it with our guest, Henry McKenna of Patriots Wire. Be sure to go follow Henry at McKenna Analysis on Twitter. Henry, thanks for joining us.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
So we're going to get right into it now, and Henry, you and I were both at the mysterious Gronk presser yesterday. I just wanted to get your impressions of what seemed like a subdued and maybe a frustrated Rob Gronkowski.
Yeah, frustrated is right. I think this is the second or third week in a row where reporters have asked him, you know, about his declining stats, particularly his touchdown drought, no touchdowns since week one. And this is from the guy that used to own the red zone. So I imagine he's frustrated that he's not producing, but to have the questions circle around that lack of productivity for weeks at a time, he was just kind of done with it. And that's what, according to MassLive's Andrew Callahan, Gronk was sort of ranting with PR about in the locker room after the press conference was, I can't believe they're asking the same question. Which, I mean, I can understand why he's frustrated, but at the same time, he hasn't scored touchdowns. So we're still going to ask because it's still a story. So, the mood was kind of awkward. It was not typical Gronk in the press conference because it's not typical Gronk on the field.
Yeah, I think that that's a pretty good summary right there. And, you know, it's tough to see Gronk like that because he's always such a jovial and fun person to be around. So to see him kind of down on himself and down on the media as well was tough. But like you said, I mean, we'd have to ask the questions, right? And if he was putting up a lot of touchdowns, if he's played seven games this year, if he had eight touchdowns, then we wouldn't be asking him that. We'd be asking him, you know, what he attests to, you know, his performance being so good. But unfortunately, and I think that for a player like Rob Gronkowski, who's used to being an all-pro tight end, who's used to being good every week, it's tough to then answer questions about him not being so good and, you know, kind of going in that other direction. But one thing just from a, you know, looking forward standpoint, he only has two targets in the red zone right now, which I think is as much on the coaching staff as it is on Gronk. You know, there has to be some sort of onus on the coaching staff. You have this 6'6" tight end who is always a beast in the red zone. You kind of have to, you know, find ways to get him open, find ways to get him some space and away from some double teams. It's not that the red zone offense has really suffered all that much without Gronk because the ball has gone other places, like James White, for example. But, you know, Adam, I think that they need to find ways to maybe get him more involved in those situations.
Right. And I guess to add to that, I would just say that sort of any player that's answering questions about how their performance isn't really statistically or something, whatever, up to par is going to be a little bit defensive. So it doesn't surprise me that much. But I'd also kind of think that, you know, at being asked a question like that, it'd be sort of like, well, you know, that kind of thing doesn't matter to me as long as we score as a team and that sort of thing. So, but you know, I can see why you would get under his skin, I guess. But yeah, I mean, it's been one of those things where you wonder why he's not getting more targets in the red zone, because it's one of those things where, like we say all the time about certain guys, where he might be covered, but he's still open. You know, it could be one of those things. I feel like sometimes earlier in the season, the coaches almost save him, you know, for, you know, more important games later in the season. But I do feel that, like, it'll come around. And it's not like he's not contributing in other ways. There have been big receptions that he's made that have been, you know, help the team win. I mean, I remember the Kansas City game where he made that big catch along the right sideline where, you know, it helped put them in field goal position. I mean, that's not a touchdown, but that's a game-changing play. So, you know, I feel like it might be, you know, something where it's bothersome to him, and you know he might not like answering questions about it. But you know, if you look at it in another way, it's not that big of a deal.
Yeah, I mean, we should definitely point out that he's playing injured, two different injuries, ankle and a back injury. And I also agree with you that sometimes they like to save, you know, players like Rob Gronkowski maybe for more important games, whether it's later on in the regular season or in January and February in the playoffs. But now let's move on to talking about the matchup this week between the Packers and the Patriots. Obviously, on Sunday Night Football, Aaron Rodgers versus Tom Brady is kind of where everybody's starting, Henry. And what are your opinions, first of all, of putting Rodgers right now in the GOAT, the greatest of all time conversation?
I just think it's wrong. I think that Aaron Rodgers is an incredibly talented quarterback, but the greatest of all time is measured beyond physical abilities. It's measured in so many other ways when it comes to the quarterback position. And I think that people get a little too heavy on accolades in terms of like Super Bowls, Pro Bowls, MVPs. But I also think that you need those as a part of your resume. And right now, Aaron Rodgers is a top 10 quarterback in history, putting all those things together. And he's got maybe six more years or something like it. And so could he emerge as a top three or even the greatest? I think he could, but his career is incomplete. His resume to be the best of all time is incomplete. So I think there's an incredible recency bias for anyone who claims that he is the greatest, because like it just doesn't add up. I don't think there's any way. The one way you can make the argument is by watching film of him. But that's like breaking a per play basis down, looking at, you know, his body of work as one play or a bunch of plays. It's very truncated view. You have to look at the whole career, and so his career is incomplete and could push himself higher up in the discussion.
Right. I mean, if Tom Brady retired tomorrow, he has such a long resume of things that we can look at: 5-time Super Bowl champion, 3-time MVP. Aaron Rodgers, if he retired tomorrow, I mean, obviously he's a Hall of Famer. He's one of the, you know, better quarterbacks of all time. But if you just look at his resume, even up against like a Joe Montana or even a John Elway or maybe some of the other guys that are in the fringe of that conversation, it's not even close to kind of the career longevity and the statistics and all that type of stuff from a counting standpoint. I mean, even a guy like Peyton Manning or Drew Brees has better, you know, accolades, I would say, from their entire careers than an Aaron Rodgers. And I think that Aaron Rodgers, we can all agree, is probably one of the most talented, if not the most talented, players in terms of skill at the position, throwing the ball, being able to run with it as well. His throw-making ability, his downfield ball placement and accuracy are some of the best that you're ever going to see, and as well as his arm strength. So I think all of those things are very true, and he plays the position in a very unique way, I would say. There aren't very many guys that can replicate exactly what he does, and Brady definitely has to do it in a different way, obviously being more of a stationary quarterback. But like you said, the greatest of all time conversation isn't just about, you know, looking at the film or looking at what guys are physically capable of doing. It's also about, you know, what they've achieved in throughout their course of their careers. And I think that that's where Aaron Rodgers, I mean, the jury's still out. He could go ahead and win, you know, two more Super Bowls and a couple more MVPs before he retires. And maybe he's more in this conversation, but I think that, you know, putting him, you know, in the conversation is one thing, but saying that he is, I think is, you know, quite a stretch. I would even still say that, you know, some of the guys like a Joe Montana or a John Elway have more of a claim to it that right now than Aaron Rodgers. Adam, what's your take?
I agree with all that. I feel like sometimes people force these greatest of all time discussions just to have them. And like Henry said, the recency bias sort of comes into play. So, you know, and it's like everybody's been saying through this whole sort of discussion, is Aaron Rodgers physically can do stuff that, you know, almost no quarterback is capable of. But, you know, that's not the whole picture. You know, you can't just jump over a guy who's got 5 Super Bowls and stuff like that with Brady. And, you know, they don't have the exact same skill set, but it's, you know, resume comes into play at a certain point, and Brady's got the better one. So, and like you said, I mean, you're not just talking about, when you say greatest of all time, you're not just talking about two active players, even though this is an era where, you know, quarterbacks throw a lot more. I mean, you still have to put Montana in there. I still think Elway is quite up there as well. I mean, he has two Super Bowls, and, you know, like you said, you know, if Rodgers, you know, gets a couple more Super Bowls, then maybe this conversation is a little bit more interesting. But right now, I think it's kind of forced.
Yeah, I think if we were grading this greatest of all time discussion on a scale of just who's the most talented, you know, thrower of the football, or who's the most talented athlete to play the position, I mean, then you open it up to guys like Dan Marino and Brett Favre, who are just physically freaks, but weren't necessarily have the career accolades. I mean, obviously Marino never won a Super Bowl, Favre only won one Super Bowl. But if you just look at, you know, ability to throw the ball all over the place and quick releases and, you know, dynamite arms, those guys are as much in the conversation, I think, as an Aaron Rodgers. It's just, you know, I almost think that there's a chance that if Rodgers doesn't win another Super Bowl and maybe only wins one more MVP or doesn't win any more MVPs at all, that he's more in the conversation with guys like Marino and Brett Favre as just like physical mavens, but not necessarily greatest of all time. But that's one discussion. Another discussion is going to be here Sunday night, stopping Aaron Rodgers for this Patriots defense, Henry, which is obviously going to be very difficult for a defense that's kind of been hot and cold, and a lot of it's been depending on the opponent. You know, they play well against teams like Miami and Buffalo, but those are not exactly the teams that we're going to see here with Aaron Rodgers on Sunday night.
Yeah, and we know that Aaron Rodgers plays so well with his back up against the wall, and that's exactly the situation the Packers are in. They're up for an incredibly challenging schedule coming up. I can't cite it offhand, but I know they've got a short week in Seattle, and all sorts of major obstacles coming up. So this is a game that they have to win. I mean, every game is a game you have to win, but the record isn't very good right now. They might find themselves in the wild card hunt rather than, you know, the top of their division. And so it's a desperate team, coming into Gillette, and a desperate Aaron Rodgers, and a really inconsistent Patriots secondary that I don't think can defend him in any significant way. They struggle with Pat Mahomes. They struggle with Mitch Trubisky. I think they're going to struggle enormously with Aaron Rodgers. And Gilmore might have a good matchup on Devontae Adams. That's been a matchup that's been successful all season. Gilmore, that is, against the number one corner. But then when you look beyond that, that's when the Patriots consistently start having problems. So Cobb becomes an issue. Jimmy Graham becomes an issue. And Valdez-Scantling, and it goes on. I mean, Geronimo Allison, they have a really deep crew at wide receiver. And the Patriots' depth at cornerback just isn't there to match it.
Yeah, and that's a really good point. That Gilmore-Adams matchup, I mean, I'm sure both sides are kind of going to win a few in that vein. Kind of like what happened with Marcus Peters last week. Adams certainly got the better of him, I think. But there were some moments where Peters won the matchup, and then there's some moments where Adams won the matchup. But it's going to be those secondary guys. And I also think it's going to be being able to get some pressure on Rodgers, because his passer rating and his efficiency really drops throughout the whole course of his career. He actually hasn't been quite as dynamic as some of the other really good quarterbacks under pressure. And that's something that I think that, you know, the Patriots haven't really been able to do quite consistently yet, pressure the quarterback, that is, especially these mobile guys. They've had a lot of trouble containing them in the pocket, you know, with Trubisky and some of the other guys that have burned them in that fashion. So I think that, you know, as much as you want to see them kind of cover on the back end a little bit better, I do think that, you know, the pass rush and the back end kind of go hand in hand, right? And you have to have a pass rush to be able to, you know, help those guys in the secondary to kind of cover a little bit less time and to be able to cover in different ways. So I think that, you know, to pressure Aaron Rodgers, his passer rating right now is around 56 while under pressure. A lot of that has to do with, you know, the receivers as well, obviously, and the stuff around them. But overall, I think that that's kind of got to be the game plan, is you got to have an organized but still a disruptive pass rush. And obviously, you know, a lot of it is going to be pressuring with the interior of that defensive line and having the guys on the edge kind of contained. Now, that's what the Rams did. And obviously they have Aaron Donald in the middle. So that was what, you know, they don't need to necessarily bring extra rushers or anything like that because they can let Aaron Donald kind of go and do their thing. But the other thing that they did that I thought was interesting, that will be something that I'm going to write about this week in the Pats game plan, is just that, you know, sometimes Rodgers doesn't exactly do the best at setting protections pre-snap. And you can kind of catch him every once in a while, you know, with pressures off the edge that he's not really expecting. It happened a couple of times against the Rams where they ended up dropping seven guys in the coverage and only rushing four, but they rushed a guy that he wasn't expecting them to rush, and they dropped the guy there he was expecting to rush, kind of tricked him that way. So he sometimes isn't, you know, the best at setting his protections and doing that kind of thing. So I think that there's some ways you can trick him that way, but you definitely don't want to blitz him too often, because that he can be really dangerous in that regard too. So it's really pressure with your front four and then good coverage on the back end and getting those two things to work together, I think is, you know, what the Patriots are going to have to do. But it's obviously easier said than done. I mean, some teams have had success with it. I think the Rams in the first half of that game especially had some success, and then the game kind of opened up on both sides, you know, later on in the game in the second half. And then obviously the Redskins, you go back to that game, they had some success against it with the two, and they actually beat the Packers, held the Packers offense to 17 points, and, you know, it didn't look as pretty for them. So I think there is some truth also, you know, just to wrap it up, that he's not quite as dynamic with his legs right now because of that knee injury than maybe he would have been if they played him when he was 100% healthy. You know, he still can run, obviously, and it's still a threat. But it's not quite, he's not quite as elusive and explosive as a runner as he would be in the past.
Right. I agree. I think it's when I look at this game for the Pats, it's one of those deals where you can't, you can't not have great pressure on Rodgers and expect to get away with anything. So, you know, again, like the Rams game, I mean, they had Aaron Donald and, you know, had great pressure up the middle. And, you know, this is, you know, right now the Pats, you know, best hope at getting to somebody without blitzing is Trey Flowers. So if they can get Trey Flowers going off the edge and really making plays that way, that's your best hope. But you can't have, against Aaron Rodgers, you can't have him avoiding the rush and getting extra seconds, because his guys will get open and he always has great chemistry when the play breaks down. So, you know, make him make quicker decisions and, you know, not allow him to, you know, get plays downfield, because just the more time you give him, like any quarterback, but especially with him, because he's so accurate down the field, just don't, you just can't let him run around back there. So I think, you know, Flowers is just the key matchup in this scenario.
Yeah, maybe we see Flowers bump inside and kind of rush and take advantage of some of the places where Aaron Donald was able to get after the quarterback. We've seen the Patriots do that in the past. All right, let's move over to the Patriots side on offense. And I think the talk over the last couple of days, especially since we've had Ivan Fears available to us the last couple of days, has been Cordarrelle Patterson playing running back. Sonny Michel's been back at practice. We saw him again today out there. Haven't gotten the official report, but we saw him at least stretching and going through some drills. If there is no Sonny Michel on Sunday, and that's an if, you know, can Cordarrelle kind of do enough in the running game to give the Patriots a little bit of a threat out of the backfield? Because I think that getting very one-dimensional against Buffalo and not really having a running game at all in that game was a big factor and a big reason why the offense as a whole struggled.
I will go on record as saying that I am not a believer in Cordarrelle Patterson.
I don't blame you.
Being a running back. He was not impressive. He was a one-yard carry kind of guy until – he got good blocking off the edge and finally turned the corner and got upfield for a 20-yarder that basically saved his game. And I know it's tricky to say, oh, if he hadn't had this one carry, then his average would be this. But his average was 3 yards per carry with that 21-yard carry or whatever it was on the day. And so they need Sonny Michel to come back. And something tells me, in terms of how they've managed their personnel, that they kind of expect him to be back this week, because they figure, I mean, I'm just thinking out loud, not because I know anything in particular, but, you know, they figure they can get past having a limited running back depth chart for 1 week against the Buffalo Bills, as long as Sony doesn't have any setbacks and they can get him against the Packers. Because that was kind of the reports out of the injury, was that it was going to be week to week, that he might miss 1 week, might miss a few, and he was doubtful, had 1 day of practice in week 8, and he's limited, and I imagine he'll probably be questionable heading into this game. So it seems from a personnel management standpoint like Michelle is probably going to come back and play this weekend. If he doesn't, then like you said, Evan, I think they have problems, and in a much more significant way, because you want to be able to keep the ball away from Aaron Rodgers, especially if he ends up lighting up the Patriots secondary like I think he will. And the Patriots were able to control the ball against the Chiefs until like the final 10 minutes of the game, when it started being a full-on shootout, which was wild and fun to watch. But if they want to win the game, they got to control the game a lot like that, and they can't do that without Michelle.
Yeah, I think you hit the nail on the head there. I think it's interesting that they didn't go more with Kenyon Barner in that game, because I think the one thing that I saw with Patterson was, okay, he had the one explosive run, and he has the ability, obviously, to turn the corner and get some big runs, but his vision is just so lacking in between the tackles and on interior runs, that those like 3 or 4 yards per carry that you can average on first and second down, that, yeah, okay, maybe it's not a 20-yard run like his run that he had late in the game, but at least it gets the offense ahead of the chains a little bit, and you know, 4 yards, 5 yards on first down is obviously perfectly fine. You know, that could be second and manageable, and hopefully third and manageable, or gets you out of third down altogether. So with Patterson, it really looked like he was just constantly trying to hit the home run, and the blocking just wasn't really there for that to happen. And obviously the Bills, I think the week before, they got carved up by the Indianapolis Colts on the ground, and so they went into practice that entire week and probably talked a whole lot about run defense, and it kind of seemed to work, and they're playing a very aggressive style, attacking the line. Josh McDaniels said that on Tuesday when we were talking about the play action passing game, was that, you know, the Patriots were noticing that the Bills defense, especially the linebacking core, was constantly just attacking the line of scrimmage, so they were, you know, able to kind of find some spots behind them in the play action passing game. But I think that with Patterson, I mean, he's a gimmick player. Me and Adam have been saying this, you know, all year long when they were really trying to get him to play receiver a lot early in the season when they had no depth there. He's a gimmick player. He's a, at best, he's a 10 or 15 play, you know, snaps a game guy on offense. And really what you can use him for are, you know, some jet sweeps, maybe some screen passes, some occasional handoffs out of the backfield if you really need it. And also, you know, some downfield targets with aided by scheme, like the pick play that we saw against Miami, those types of things. He's just not the type of guy that's consistent enough, I don't think, to be a cog in your offense that you're relying on every single week. So I was really surprised that they didn't go more Kenyon Barner in that game, especially in the second half, after it really wasn't working with Patterson in the first half, because I just thought, you know, at worst, at least that he was going to go in there and average 3.5-4 yards a carry, and we're not talking about getting a big run to pad those stats, but, you know, more of a consistent threat, and it just – they never really felt comfortable, I guess, with going with Barner, which I thought was pretty surprising.
Yeah, it's one of those deals, too. It's kind of like a one-dimensional type of run when you get Patterson, because it's not right. Like it's going to hurt you running between the tackles. It's going to be a toss one way or the other, kind of. So yeah, I think it's an experiment that they wanted to see what would work. I mean, and I bet they kind of felt like, all right, no matter what we try with the running backs this week against Buffalo, we're going to be fine. So, you know, they just wanted to, this is sort of a conspiracy theory type of look at it, but like, oh, let's see if this works and maybe we can try this. But yeah, I would expect if Michelle doesn't play, Barner would be, you know, more the move there. And, you know, because they have to, you know, look at what happened this past week and sort of realize that, okay, that didn't quite look right. So yeah, I would expect more of Barner if that was the case.
Yeah, I think it was, you're 100% right about the predictability of the runs. They had to go to the outside with Patterson, because, you know, he just wasn't going to be a guy that was going to be able to run up the middle consistently. And we talked about this last week a little bit, Adam, but this team really needs Sony Michel. I mean, they really need Sony Michel to be 100% when it matters most in the playoffs as well. I think that once we get to January and February, as we've seen over the last couple of years, they basically throw the ball like 65% of the time once they get into the playoffs and really put the ball in Brady's hands. So I think we'll see a lot of James White in the playoffs. But just over the course of the, you know, last eight games or so here of the regular season, you know, Sony's going to be a big factor. But we also wanted to talk about this Packers pass rush that has kind of been revitalized by Mike Pettine, who's brought in a lot of blitzes and a lot of exotic schemes to kind of get guys open. And then obviously those two guys in the middle, Mike Daniels and Kenny Clark, right now are playing about as good a football in the interior defensive line as any kind of duo in the league right now.
Yeah, so I'll leave most of this to you guys because my film study on the Packers is not nearly as thorough as Evan's, but I know that those guys have been, I mean, crushing it, and we need look no further than Super Bowl when Brady lost the ball and it ended the game. I mean, that interior pass rush can be problematic. Look back at the Texans playoff game. Was it 2 years ago?
Yeah.
And so, you know, the Patriots and Brady can be susceptible to that interior pass rush. I mean, every quarterback can. We just talked about how Rodgers is. And so if these guys can get there, especially looking at, you know, was Mason limited today?
He wasn't even out there, I don't think, when we saw him.
So no Shaq Mason, a guy who probably, like, should be a Pro Bowl tackle or guard, sorry. With him not even in there, that could be problems for Ted Karras, the backup. And – yeah, so if it gets to a point where it is a shootout and the Patriots have to throw a lot at a high volume, that means they're going to have to be blocking those guys all four quarters, and that's going to get harder and harder progressively through the game.
Yeah, 100%. I think that, you know, these two interior guys, Mike Daniels and Kenny Clark, for a football nerd like me, are like two great guys to watch because they're just so fundamentally sound. I mean, they both have athleticism and get off and all those things too, but they're just fantastic with their hands and great pad level, and they got a bunch of different pass rush moves. But really, I think the biggest thing that I've noticed from watching this Packers team is that Mike Pettine, the defensive coordinator, has a lot of really good ways of getting pass rush on the quarterback. They're third right now in pressure percentage by PFF's numbers, and he's kind of brought in the Rex Ryan style defense, as you would expect, you know, with his history with Rex Ryan, to Green Bay. And what they've been able to do is they've been able to throw a lot of different types of blitzes and pass rush schemes that kind of go against what, you know, the offensive line and the pass protection rules are. They kind of play with those rules. They make running backs a big factor in blitz pickup and in pass protection and making dual reads to kind of figure out, do I block this linebacker? Do I block this end? Where am I going? Todd Gurley, who's a pretty solid pass protector, got caught up a lot of times in that Rams game, kind of not knowing where to go necessarily because the pressure was just, you know, coming from a lot of different places. And those two guys, Clark and Daniels, as good as Clay Matthews is at times on the edge, that's really that's their strength of their defense, is right up the middle. And those two guys, I think, are going to be a big problem for the interior of the Patriots offensive line, because like you said, it's most likely going to be Ted Karras starting at right guard. That's, you know, Ted Karras has been a solid backup. He's a solid kind of swing guard center type player that can fill in all three spots, but he's obviously, you know, going to be trying to tread water in this game and not necessarily bringing it from like a Pro Bowl all pro type standpoint, like a Shaq Mason would. So I think that this is going to be a huge key matchup, because as we know with Brady, you know, pressure up the middle is kind of always his kryptonite, because if he doesn't have that lane, that little pocket to step up into and to drive his throws and drive his legs downfield and also kind of maneuver in that way too, it can get dicey at times. And that it's going to be very interesting to see how, you know, Dante Scarnecchia and Josh McDaniels and those guys kind of plan to slow down this very heavy blitzing scheme. They're blitzing almost 40% of the time, so they bring pressure a lot. It's going to be interesting, because I think that, you know, there's a formula here where the Packers pass rush, similarly to what the Bills pass rush did last week, especially when you factor in that there isn't going to be much of a running game if Sony Michel doesn't play in this game, it could get dicey. And I think that you could see some similar things from what we saw with the Bills, where that pressure really got the Patriots into some tight spots and forced them into field goals, especially, you know, in the red zone and the fringe red zone, by just getting pressure on Brady in key situations on, you know, big third downs and stuff like that.
Yeah, I agree that the any sort of pressure up the middle is one of those kryptonite things for Brady, but and like you guys have been saying, for anybody really, but you know, you have to think that if it's pressure schemes that the Packers are coming up with, then it's one of those deals where you sort of trust Brady to usually know where it's coming from. And you know, that's not a, if you're an opponent, you'd rather be able to get to Brady without having the pressure, so you can have some more guys in the coverage. But yeah, I think it's one of those deals where, you know, somebody like David Andrews, who's an experienced center and good communicator, a lot's going to be on his shoulders for this. And I think you made a good point as far as, you know, the running backs being able to, you know, be on the same page blocking wise with these blitzes and everything like that, because, you know, if the running backs can't block when there's an all out blitz coming in, then, you know, the quarterback's at great risk. So, yeah, I think it's a concern. But it's also one of those things where I feel like if there's any quarterback who pre-snap can sort of read where blitzes are coming from, it'd probably be Brady.
Yeah, the running backs, this Pettine scheme, and, you know, similar to the Rex Ryan scheme, it just puts a whole lot of pressure on those running backs to be on the same page as everybody else and really know what their assignment is and who they're going to be picking up, because they can run a lot of overload blitzes to one side, or they run that mug front with the two linebackers in the A gap. And then you start bringing those pressures, and it gets kind of dicey as to, you know, are we sliding protection here? Or am I going to the edge? Am I picking up the blocker, you know, the blitzer in the middle of the field? You know, what am I doing? So I think this is a big week for kind of James White, especially, who I think will be in there a whole lot, and maybe even leaving Devlin in there at times with some of these overload blitzes will also help at two, I think, to try to pick some of these up. But I think that, you know, where we want to go with this next is that a lot of these blitzes are great for pressuring the quarterback, but it puts a whole lot of pressure on the secondary a lot of the time as well, of this Packers defense to, you know, hold up. They play some zone off of it, but they also play a ton of man coverage. And these young cornerbacks, Henry, Jaire Alexander, have you heard Belichick praise a rookie as much as he's praised Jaire Alexander over the last couple of days?
That's a good question, because I can't think of a rookie that's gotten that much praise. I've been covering the team for, this is my third season, and I think this might be, you know, some of the highest praise. So, yeah, and apparently Bill, I saw a report this week that Bill had circled Jaire Alexander as a potential draft target for him. We know how much Bill values DBs. He ended up drafting Duke Dawson in the second round. And so maybe Bill kind of coveted Alexander during the draft process and wishes maybe Alexander was helping bolster his secondary.
Yeah, that's definitely true.
Looking longingly. So he's been outstanding. Looking last week at what he did to Brandon Cooks was very, very impressive, and kind of had – it was reminiscent of what Patriots fans didn't like about Cooks in New England, which was that – like some physicality and some really tough man-to-man coverage can, with a little bit of help bracketing, can basically shut him down and erase him from the game. And because the Rams didn't have Cooper Kupp last week, there wasn't a huge threat opposite. I mean, it was who's their three guy that was in there last week?
For the Rams?
Yeah.
Josh Reynolds?
Reynolds. Reynolds was there, and he was solid. But and actually – he was productive, because I don't think that the Packers anticipated him to be as productive as he was. But basically, Alexander is what Belichick, you know, said he is, which is a really surprisingly excellent man cover corner, and probably will play on Josh Gordon, although I wouldn't guarantee it, just because Gordon has been so spotty that it would make some sense, I guess, to put him in the slot, although I don't know if Alexander would play well
he
in
does,
the slot.
He does scheme. Sometimes shadow, like he shadowed Cooks wherever he went last week.
Right.
But their scheme is interesting because they put a whole lot of pressure on these guys to play on an island. It's similar to what they used to do in New York with Darrelle Revis. Obviously, he's not that type of player quite yet, but if you remember, you know, Revis, they basically used to say to Revis, all right, you got this guy and you got this side of the field and you shut it down and we're going to run a lot of blitzes. We're going to run a lot of stuff with our front seven and get after the quarterback, and we're going to rely on our corners. That's why, you know, the Jets went out and got Antonio Cromartie as well, so that they could have those, you know, kind of bookend corners on both sides of the ball. The Packers, similarly, they went the youth route with it, but they drafted Josh Jackson and they drafted Jaire Alexander in back-to-back rounds to try to, you know, solidify that corner spot that's been really a revolving door for them. But at the same time, they don't have a ton of depth there, which is why I think that Reynolds was able to go off in that game. They've kind of given up on some of their veteran corners, like a Sam Shields, who's now on the Rams, ironically. And some of those guys are gone. And HaHa Clinton Dix, obviously, they just traded him so at the safety position, so he's gone. But I think that with Jaire, I mean, Adam, we love Jaire.
Yeah.
We could not have heaped more praise on a guy. I think that everybody was kind of on board with Jaire Alexander being a star. I had him, I think, eighth or ninth on my board overall. And the main reasons that he fell in the draft were because he was hurt last year for a lot of the season. And he's a little bit undersized for, like, kind of what the prototypical NFL cornerback is nowadays. But I think that, you know, once you see him play, all that kind of stuff, size and all that, those types of things kind of go out the door. I mean, he's just incredibly sticky. His hips are unbelievable. He's got good ball skills. He can tackle. I mean, he plays the position about as good as anybody. And I could totally understand and see, A, that Belichick probably wanted him and is a little disappointed that he didn't fall. And two, I can totally see why Belichick felt that he was such a great fit for the Patriots scheme, because he plays such good man coverage and he has the ability to play a little bit of zone as well and ball hawk in some zone situations too. So I think that was basically, from a cookie cutter standpoint, if you could check all the boxes, he's a Patriots corner through and through on every single box. So I think that you're 100% right, Henry, that Belichick probably wishes that he was on his team instead of on the Packers. But Adam, I mean, we love Jaire. I mean, I think that he was one of the guys that we both unanimously agreed on was going to be a stud.
Yeah, I remember the year before he was draft eligible, there was a game against Clemson when he was playing at Louisville, and he was all over the field. I'm like, who is this guy? I think he made two interceptions that game on Deshaun Watson. And the one thing about him that really sticks out, and it's sort of an obvious thing when you're just watching anybody, is he's just a playmaker. You know, like he's somebody that fights for the ball. He's got a real tenacious attitude that you like to see in a corner. He's also a pretty good tackler, which gets kind of overlooked when you're looking at corners.
He's feisty. Like, he has that attitude of a corner that, you know, like that chip on his shoulder that you like to see.
Right, exactly. And, you know, when you saw him go against Cooks, it was one of those things when the ball was in the air, Alexander simply fought harder for it than Brandon did. And, you know, that's some of the things that some Patriots fans, like you said, didn't like about Brandon. But, you know, the thing with Jaire is, you know, he's just, like you said, he's feisty. He fights for the ball. He's got good physical skills, but it's really his attitude that puts him over the top. In fact, I think it was when I was doing my when I was still at the Herald and I did like the mock draft or whatever, I think I had the Patriots picking, but he didn't slide far enough or whatever. But he's fun to watch. You know, guys with that attitude can really just, you know, make it fun to watch a corner play. And he's already got six passes defended. He's got an interception. He's somebody that is kind of a threat too after the pick. He was somebody who returned punts at Louisville. This is a weapon on defense. So, you know, but like you guys said, like, you know, the depth of the cornerback play, they obviously targeted guys in the draft. Josh Jackson is the other guy. You know, to sort of rebuild that depth. And, you know, I feel like the Patriots can have some success there. I'm just curious to see where Alexander ends up lining up. Some teams, are deciding to put their best guys on Josh Gordon. I'd be curious to see if they'd like to match him up with Edelman. But you never know. So I'm leaning towards Gordon, but, just because, maybe they feel like he's more dangerous, but who knows? But like I said, he's an enjoyable player to watch. He's somebody that, like we said, we were just sort of drooling over in the draft process. And there were a lot of good corners in this draft. So I think he's the one that we really liked the most.
I kind of feel like maybe, just thinking about it now, that Edelman might actually be the matchup for Alexander, because Jackson's more of the bigger guy. He's got a little bit more height to him, and he can kind of high point the ball a little bit better too. So I it's an interesting thing, because Jair's so sticky and he's so good with staying with guys and changing directions and doing all that kind of stuff. He kind of does fit the Edelman mold, but if they put Julian in the slot like they like to do, I don't know how much, experience and how much they are willing to kind of move Alexander into the slot and away from the boundary. So I think that will be an interesting kind of chess match to look at here. But it sounds to me, I mean, we've hyped up this Packers team a lot during this last like 40 minutes. I mean, I think that this has the makings, at least, and I'm not going to make you make like a score prediction or anything like that, because I don't want to put you on the spot, but this has the makings of being probably the game of the season, I would say, for the Patriots. And as good as that Kansas City game was, I think that maybe this game has a chance to be better played on the defensive side of the ball at times than that Kansas City game was.
I can't make any guarantees that defense will be better in this game, because as much as we love Alexander, the point I was going to make also is that you can throw around him, and that's what the Rams did, and that's what a lot of teams have done to beat the Packers, among other things. I mean, the Packers, they've lost a lot of games, and the Chiefs haven't.
Ultimately,
I don't know. When you have Rodgers and Brady on the field at the same time, it's going to be a great game. And especially because these defenses are very beatable. So it's kind of a question of which side can control the defensive bleeding better. And as I mentioned, can if Michelle's out on the field, can you keep your defense off the field for the Patriots? And so a ball control battle might be more challenging for the Patriots. So I don't know. High scoring game for sure. Close game, probably. And then a high-quality offensive play.
Yeah, I think the one advantage, obviously, the Patriots do have that we know for a fact is that this game's going to be here at Foxborough at Gillette Stadium, which I think that Kansas City game, if that game's at Arrowhead, I think it's a whole different ball game. So having it here at home and not be, in Lambeau, I think will be very big. But, Henry, thanks so much for staying on with us and rambling with us about this game. And it's going to be, a really great game, I think, on Sunday night. But tell everybody, where they can read you, where they can follow you, and if you want to tease anything, go ahead.
Yeah, I'm on PatriotsWire.com. It's on the USA Today network of NFL sites. So if you're somehow a fan of another team, because this is a very Patriot-centric podcast, there's a Wire site.
Maybe some Packers fans.
Packers Wire is a great site, actually, run by one of our best writers and editors. And I also write for The Big Lead, which is another USA Today site, covering NFL, NBA, all that stuff. And then, like Evan said, you can follow me on Twitter, McKenna Analysis. If you don't feel like figuring out how to type that, just search Henry McKenna. I'm verified. You'll find me. And I got a cool little feature coming up probably next Monday or Tuesday on Jason McCourty. So keep your eyes peeled for that.
Yeah, McCourty's been, I think, a great addition to this team on the field. But in terms of his quotes and like what he says to us, he's almost as good as Devin in that regard. He's not quite like ready to take the training wheels off of the Belichick, speak of what you say to the media like Devin has, but he's a he's a great addition, I think, both in terms of team chemistry and also what he does on the field. All right, Adam, your turn. What do you got coming down on Mass Varsity?
Well, I got some games and stuff on Mass Varsity, but I just wanted to mention that this week, Armin Colombo, the former Brockton High coach, passed away. A legendary guy. I'm headed over to his wake just after this. When I first started at the Globe, he's one of the first features I did. He's one of the kindest guys I covered. Did so much for Massachusetts high school football in the modern era. His teams in the 80s and early 90s were some of the best the state has ever seen. Really a true titan in the sport in this state and for all the nation, really helped put Massachusetts football on the map here. And so it's tough. He was a great man. From a great family, I believe married to one of Rocky Marciano's sisters, and so it's sad. It's a sad day, but as far as what he's done for Massachusetts and helping not just his own players but other players that he played against. Get college scholarships and make it onto the next level. I mean, there are a few guys who did more. Also want to mention when it comes to Henry's great work, if you can, Google some of his past articles, one of the favorite ones I read this year was the one with Brady and building trust with his receivers. That was a really great breakdown that Henry did. So definitely look that up if you want to get familiar with Henry's stuff. And as far as Mass Varsity is concerned, we'll be covering games. I think tomorrow night we'll probably be at either Natick King Philip or Hingham Walpole, which should both be good games.
I second all the things that you just said about Henry and about Coach. But for CLNS Media, be sure to check out Patriot CLNS on Twitter. CLNS YouTube page. We'll be obviously here at Gillette Stadium to cover the Packers game. And, we have wall-to-wall coverage pre, post, during, all that type of stuff. So make sure to be on the lookout for all of that. And then Adam and I will be back next week to preview the Tennessee Titans. Patriots South, I like to call them every once in a while. It's either them or the Houston Texans. They kind of, are vying for that crown. But old friend Malcolm Butler, old friend Deion Lewis, old friend Mike Vrabel, that one's got, there's no shortage of storylines with that one, like the Sunday night game with the Packers, but that one is definitely full of those types of storylines. So we'll be back next week to break that all down. But until then, signing off, thanks once again to Henry McKenna for coming on with us, for Adam Kirchin as well. I'm Evan Lazar. Thanks for listening.